By choosing to connect his power with the Merovingian and Carolingian dynasties, Napoleon had successfully managed to link himself with French national history and the Roman Catholic Church. The first kings of France were historically powerful, but the fact that that dynasty had been dethroned by the Pope created a complication with the present-day relationship Napoleon would have with the Vatican. By laying claim to the line that the papacy had set up in the place of the Merovingians, Napoleon was also using the goodwill that was still felt by Rome for Charlemagne. Charlemagne was loved, even in the 1700s, by the Roman Catholic Church for his protectorship, and the Merovingian dynasty laid claim to the universally loved idea of quote-unquote firsts. Napoleon was using his knowledge of his nation's history to manage some very crafty politics, even though it was harking back to a history that was almost 1,000 years old. Yet, even though he so craftily wove a narrative that combined natural-born power and religious power, and made a point of inviting the king to France to officiate his coronation, Napoleon also acted in a way that really offended the Roman Catholic Church. At the coronation ceremony, Napoleon seemed to lose patience waiting for the Pope to give him the crown and throne, and simply took the crown and placed it on his own head, crowning himself Emperor of France. Some say that Napoleon was making an Enlightenment-esque statement to the papacy by crowning himself. Others say he was impatient and self-important. While this may have been a childish fit of impatience on the part of Napoleon, it seems like someone who so patiently created such a strong narrative regarding who he wanted to emulate as a ruler might have been up to something much more calculated. Understanding the France that he was about to take rule of, and knowing his peers' dedication to the revolution, his disrespect of the Pope, and disregard of the Catholic Church's authority, may have been a strategic move to gain the trust and respect of the post-revolution French people. This is only speculation, however, as there are some things that Napoleon never explained. As Napoleon began his reign, he ushered in a new aesthetic in the arts called Empire Style. Empire Style took all the elements of neoclassical design and added Egyptian aesthetics. While the fine arts didn't feel the impact of the Empire Style too directly, architecture and interior design saw more additions of Egyptian motifs being combined with ancient Roman imagery. Empire Style is considered to be a late phase of neoclassicism. As France shifted into a new phase of existence under Napoleon, the fine arts saw a shift as its young students sought new themes and inspiration. No longer roused by the ideas of ancient Rome and influenced by Napoleon's shifting gaze to the history of France, young artists began to look to medieval periods for material to use in their imagery. Jean-Auguste Dominique Ong was a gifted student of Jacques-Louis David, and during his time as a student, Ong painted Napoleon on his imperial throne. The painting was not considered a smash hit at the time, as the painting rendering seemed very flat. To us, it just looks like an overexposed photograph, but to the eyes of the 1800s, it looked flat and washed out, and the imagery all referred back to the Middle Ages, but seemed like an odd choice in a neoclassically saturated art world. In Ong's painting, Napoleon sits on an imposing round-backed and gilded throne, one that is similar to those that God sits upon in Jan van Eyck's Flemish masterwork, The Ghent Altarpiece. It is worth noting that as a result of the Napoleonic Wars, the central panels of the Ghent altarpiece that include the image of God upon a throne were in the Musée Napoléon, now the Louvre, where Ong's painted his portrait. The armrests in Ong's portrait are made from pilasters that are topped with carved imperial eagles and highly polished ivory spheres. A similarly spread-winged imperial eagle appears on the rug in the foreground. Two cartouches can be seen on the left-hand side of the rug. The uppermost is the scales of justice. Some have interpreted this as a symbol for the zodiac sign for Libra. And the second is a representation of Raphael's Madonna della Seggiola from 1513-14, an artist and painting Ong's particularly admired. One final ancillary element should be mentioned. On the back wall over Napoleon's left shoulder is a partially visible heraldic shield. The iconography for this crest, however, is not that of France, but is instead Italy and the Papal States. This visually ties the Emperor of France to his position since 1805 as the King of Italy. It is not only the throne that speaks to rulership. He unblinkingly faces the viewer. In addition, Napoleon is bedazzled in attire and accoutrement of his authority. He wears a gilded laurel wreath on his head, a sign of rule and more broadly victory since classical times. In his left hand, Napoleon supports a rod topped with the hand of justice, while with his right hand he grasps the scepter of Charlemagne. An extravagant medal from the Légion d'Honneur hangs from the Emperor's shoulders by an intricate gold and jewel-encrusted chain. Although not immediately visible, a jewel-encrusted coronation sword hangs from his left hip. The reason why the sword, one of the most recognizable symbols of rulership, can hardly be seen is because of the extravagant nature of Napoleon's coronation robes. An immense ermine collar is under Napoleon's Legion d'Honneur medal. Ermine, a kind of short-tailed weasel, had been used for ceremonial attire for centuries and was notable for their white winter coats that were accented with a black tip on their tails. Thus, each black tip on Napoleon's garment represents a separate animal. Clearly, then, Napoleon's ermine collar and the ermine lining under his gold-embroidered velvet robes had been made with dozens of pelts, a certain sign of opulence. All these elements, thrones, scepters, swords, wreath, ermine, embroidered bees, and velvet, speak to Napoleon's position as emperor. But it's not only what Napoleon wears, it is also how the emperor sits. In painting this portrait, Ong's borrowed from another well-known image of powerful male figures. This type showed Zeus seated frontal and with one arm raised while the other was more at rest. The low eye level, about that of Napoleon's knees, also indicates the viewer is looking up at a seated ruler as if kneeling before him. The sum total of this painting is not just the coronation of Napoleon, but also his divine apotheosis. Ong shows him not just as a ruler, but as an omnipotent immortal. Thus, Ong is working in yet another rich visual tradition, and in doing so seems to remove Napoleon Bonaparte from the ranks of mortals of the earth and transforms him into a Greek or Roman god of Mount Olympus. Never once accused of modesty, there is no doubt that Napoleon approved of such comparisons.